Hello, Tempest fans. I am the Midnight Host, and I want to invite you to join me every Friday as I enjoy a new horror short story. For fans of The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, and Creep Show, Don't Fall Asleep is a podcast and YouTube channel featuring modern and classic horror stories. Narrated by Spencer Dillehay, the narrator for Tempest Investigations. Find us on YouTube and in podcast form. Search Don't Fall Asleep Channel on YouTube and Don't Fall Asleep Podcast in Google or your player of choice. Whatever you do, have a pint of Bob's Tail Ale before you go, and don't fall asleep. Denizens of the night, welcome to another episode of the macabre, the terrifying. Tonight, we'll finish the story Jaws of Fate by A.G. Hilton. In our last episode, we met Sienna, a runaway paramour on the run from a crime boss. She found her way down south, near Brighton, where she was drugged and imprisoned by Floyd, a farmer. As the paths of our runaway, our detectives, our hired gun, and our farmer collide, who will walk away, and who will become food for the swine? This story is called Jaws of Fate, and was written by A.G. Hilton.
Hey, pull over!
His partner's sudden yell shocked Samuel back to the present. He'd been on autopilot since they'd begun making their return drive along these winding roads. They'd gone as far as Brighton, stopped off for a bite, and then turned around. There had been nothing of note during the whole trip, and that bothered him. As silly as it sounded, he had truly believed that they would stumble across, well, something by coming out here. It had felt so right, as if someone had been whispering in his ear to get him to come out here. And now, that flicker of expectation welled up inside him again. Gerard was indicating an unassuming beige car off to the side of the road ahead of them. At first, Samuel thought the car had just pulled up on the shoulder, but then he registered the tree smashed squarely in the middle of the hood. In a moment, they too pulled off the road and were making for the wreckage. Both stopped as they came abreast of the driver's door. The airbag had failed to deploy, and the driver, a dark-haired man, had instead plowed into the steering wheel. His skull had been deeply fractured. Brain matter dotted the dashboard, and pieces of broken glass stuck from him as from a bloody pincushion.
"Jesus Christ," said Gerard. "Just went straight into the tree. Poor bastard. We better call it in, get a body bag out here."
While Gerard went back to the car to use the radio, Samuel continued to stare at the ruined man. Was this what he was meant to find today? A man past help? This still didn't feel right. There was something more. He just knew it, sensed it, on some fundamental level.
"Hey, your phone working?"
Gerard called. Samuel looked to his cell. He had no bars, and the screen flickered.
"What the hell?"
he yelled to Gerard.
"No good. Almost like some kind of weird interference."
Gerard came walking back.
"Mine is too. Radio's not working either."
"Weak signal out here?"
"It's just kaput."
"I thought it had been too quiet today." Samuel stood there for a moment, studying the blacktop, while Gerard muttered under his breath and shook his head at the carnage. A sound came to him then, drawing his eye further up the road to a bend in the distance. An old truck had just turned around and disappeared from view.
"Follow,"
the word came as distinct as if a voice from within him.
Let's go,
Samuel said.
Huh?
Come on, let's go.
Go where?
We'll find a house out here. Maybe they'll have a phone we can use to call this in.
Guy's dead. I don't see the rush.
Just get in the damn car.
Hey, what's another wild goose chase?
Sighed Gerard as he got in.
Damn it, damn it, damn it!
Floyd made it back to the house in record time, his tires throwing up gravel as he raced up the driveway. The nagging feeling which told him that the appearance of the PI had been a point of outside interference now seemed confirmed. And who were those two men that had stopped? They shouldn't be here. Everyone should be warned away this close to the time. Never before had he needed to worry about last-minute visitors. This was a sacred place, supposed to be protected. Nothing to be done about it now. And that fellow looked like he hit the tree hard, so he'd not be talking. Floyd was sure he'd turned around before whoever had stopped had the chance to notice him. Not that there could be any immediate connection drawn between himself and what, from all appearances, was an accident. Still, he didn't want anyone else even thinking of poking around this evening. Floyd turned the truck off and didn't even bother taking the keys. No matter how much he reassured himself, he felt that more trouble was on the horizon. He cursed himself for his little faith and then made for the tree line and the hidden bunker there. The sun was still well above the horizon, but he felt he couldn't afford to wait for full dark. No more chances. He needed to get this show on the road before anyone else could interfere.
Mary, look at me! Look at me!
Ever since Floyd's last appearance to smear the foul mixture on her face, the other girl had seemed to drift off to some unreachable place. She stared wide-eyed at the large sigil encompassing the floor, periodically shaking her head and putting her hands over her ears.
Mary, stay with me,
Sienna insisted. At last, her eyes turned upward, catching Sienna's. Those eyes were wide, pupils dilated.
Can't focus. It's too loud. They're too loud.
What are you talking about? It's just us. What's loud?
Them.
Sienna sat back against the cold wall. Poor Mary had finally lost it. Hell, Sienna was on the brink of losing it, and she had barely spent time in this weird place compared to Mary. The room still felt charged, as with something like static electricity, and she couldn't stop thinking about that black ichor that had come from Floyd's wound, a new addition to all the accumulated bits of high strangeness.
Who?
She found herself asking.
Who do you hear? The brood? They who call with many voices? They who suckle at the mother as she gnaws upon the root of all things?
The words put ice in Sienna's veins.
Stop it, Mary. I see it all now.
Mary's eyes glistened. She stared into the center of the circle, not at it, but through it to somewhere distant.
He's right. I can see. We have been chosen and marked for her. She has blessed him, let him see an aspect of herself. Just a small part. She sent a forerunner of the time when they come at the end of all things.
Oh, please. Please make it stop. Please, someone, make it stop.
Mary cradled her head in her hands and curled in upon herself, leaving Sienna to sit in the charged air, the only sounds coming to her being the now incessant squealing and grunting of hogs. Then came footsteps and muttering, and the hinges groaned as Floyd once again appeared at the top of the stairs. He no longer smiled. Without a word, he descended and hauled Mary upright so that she leaned heavily against the wall before turning to look at Sienna.
"Mind me now," he said. "I'm gonna unlock that chain on your ankles. But you try anything, maybe I'll give you an ankle to match little Mary's."
No sooner than he had her leg untied, he took her by the arm in a vice grip. Then, taking a limping Mary with his other hand, he led them up the stairs. As they emerged, Sienna saw they were a little past the house, the opening of the subterranean room nestled within the nearby tree line. The sky once again burned orange as the day inched closer and closer toward twilight. Strangely, Sienna sensed that as long as there was light, there was some hope. Just short of taking the top step, Sienna let her foot slip as if she had tripped. Floyd swore and tossed Mary aside, not losing his grip as he turned to Sienna. But as he came to wrench her back up, she leapt, driving her knee into the man's groin. He didn't scream or cry out, but the motion caused him to overbalance and fall as Sienna's sleeve tore in his grip. Then she was running. She didn't know where to run or what the next step was, just that she needed to get as much distance between herself and the man as possible. She made the most of her lead, plunging across the barnyard back toward the house and the road as the hogs squealed. For a moment, she thought she might actually be in the clear. Then the heavy breathing filled her ears, and she glanced back just in time to see the maddened eyes of Floyd McCaskey glaring just over her shoulder. He plowed into her with the force of a lineman and drove them both to the dirt.
"You're almost more trouble than you're worth,"
he spat the words, no longer a trace of that southern hospitality in his demeanor.
"You go in first. Happy?"
He hauled her up and threw her over his shoulder. Dazed, she tried to squirm free, but he clamped her in place with his arm. She kicked her legs, beating her knees at his chest, but might as well be kicking a wall for the effect it caused. At the last minute, she remembered something she'd seen earlier and strained her hands down toward the man's belt. Then she was thrown roughly into a new darkness. A few moments later, Mary joined her in a heap. Floyd stood above them, the dying light leaving him in silhouette within a large open door. The place stank of a rancid putridity mixed with that more familiar odor of manure. She knew at once they were in the barn. Floyd spat on the ground and spoke more of those unrecognized sibilant words, then shut the door. A jangling of chain and the distinct click of a lock sounded from outside. Mary curled up on the ground, cradling her hurt foot. Sienna had not yet caught her breath, but nevertheless felt blindly in the straw and mud beneath them, until her fingers found something solid. Something she had just managed to pull free from the back of Floyd's belt as she'd been tossed. The long knife. Its weight reassured her. They'd need to figure a way out of this barn, but the next time they ran into Floyd, she'd be ready. Bracing the knife's handle between her knees, she began sawing at the rope which bound her hands.
"What was that?"
asked Mary. She bolted up alert, staring toward the opposite end of the barn, which lay as swathed in impenetrable darkness.
"It's nothing, Mary. You're hearing things. Calm down and we'll..."
But then she heard it too, a wet sound. She couldn't place it, but there was a sense of weight behind it, as of something large and slick shifting beyond their view. Then came a tentative porcine grunting, which grew in intensity until a chorus of voices grunted and squealed madly. They were not alone.
"There!"
Again, the small directive came from within, and Samuel spotted a long gravel drive. Immediately he turned, and the car began climbing toward an old farmhouse.
"Ease up!" said Gerard. This isn't the Daytona 500.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
But Samuel didn't let up. The closer the house loomed, the more he picked up a fluttering in his gut. This place was familiar. A sense of déjà vu radiated from it in a way that made him question if this were a dream or reality. Yet he knew he'd never seen it before. He couldn't explain the knowledge, but he understood that this place was what he had come out to find, what he was meant to find. The car had scarcely come to a stop before he was climbing out and looking around the dilapidated old farm. The white house loomed before him. A raucous squealing of swine came up from somewhere out of sight.
"Where's the fire, Sam?"
Gerard stood with him now, also looking about the scene.
"What's up with you? You're making me jumpy. Gonna scare these poor folks half to death barging in here like this. All we need is to ask to use a phone, right?"
"Sure."
The reply came automatically, the question barely heard. Samuel fought an urge to put a hand to the service weapon at his side as he began toward the front door. He paused halfway there, the hairs on his neck going rigid. Then came the small interior voice.
"Down!"
He didn't question the directive, only threw himself to the gravel as a report rang out and a fence post to his back exploded in a cloud of splinters.
"Motherfucker!"
yelled Gerard somewhere behind him. Samuel scrabbled along the ground toward a nearby tree as a second report split the air. The ground just before him burst with an impact that sent bits of rock cutting into his face. He made the tree and hunkered down, his gun in hand. Behind the car, Gerard popped up with his own weapon and returned fire into a first-floor window. A silhouette lurked there, a double shotgun barrel poking out from the gloom within and into the dying light. It swiveled from Samuel toward his partner, but if Gerard was anything, it was a crack shot. Some of the detective's fire must have hit home, because before another response could be made, the shotgun's barrel visibly wavered and clattered to the ground within the window.
"Is he down?"
Samuel yelled.
"Think so."
"What the hell, even?
What about you? Are you hit?"
"I'm okay."
Samuel knew the best thing, the proper thing, would be for the two of them to clear the house. But the small voice came again.
"Barn."
Gerard came to his side.
"Jesus Christ, Sam. I thought you were dead for sure. What set him off?"
"I don't know what happened. It's almost like he was waiting for us."
The statement hung between them for a moment. Gerard put a fresh magazine into his gun and went up the steps to the front door.
"Get up, man. We gotta see what kind of goddamn mess we walked into."
"Go on,"
said Samuel.
"I'll sweep around back and meet up with you."
He didn't wait for a response. He was on his feet running around the side of the house, and he paid no mind to the back door or to meeting up with Gerard. He had eyes only for a tarp thrown hastily over a vehicle settled amid other hulks of scrap, a green Civic matching the description of the APB they'd received. Then his eyes snapped to the barn, where that insane squealing of pigs was reaching a fever pitch. Adrenaline pumped through Gerard's veins. His pulse pounded in his ears. He hadn't yet recovered from the suddenness of the violence or from his own response. He was no stranger to the use of his weapon, but he'd never put a man down as efficiently as he had the figure in the window. He'd seen Sam about to get blasted and reacted on pure instinct. He'd spotted the old man just after the first shot and responded in kind after the second. The first bullets had been wild, striking to the side of the open window, but the next were dead on. 1, 2, 3, direct center of mass. The old man had gone down like a sack of potatoes. He wasn't worried about a reprisal from the old-timer as he entered the front door, only who else might be nearby and what they might do. Still, as he came in through the front, the house lay in total stillness. He turned left and made for the window the shooter had used. That's when the panic began. The shotgun lay cracked open, the spent shells still within the chamber, and a black streaking covered the portion of rug nearest the window, the very portion where the shooter ought to be. But there was only the black streaking and a trail leading toward the back of the house.
Sam! Sam, watch it! He's still up!
He hardly believed the words as he yelled them. Those shots should have been lethal, or at least severely incapacitating. Still, he heard no response from his partner. And riding that wave of adrenaline, he followed the black trail through the back of the house and out a side door. It ran to the nearby tree line. Gerard plunged after it, like a hunter on the trail of wounded game, until he slid to a stop before an open hatch. The strange door was set into the ground and yawned into a subterranean room. More of the dark blood lined the top steps leading below. He turned to call his partner again, but was met with an ichor-spattered, wild-eyed face looming from the nearby trees. A blow took Gerard in the gut and sent him rolling back down the earthen steps into the pit. He came to a stop at the bottom, still holding the weapon, and braced his back against the far wall as a bloodied man, the very one from the window, made his deliberate descent down the steps.
Stop! Stop right there!
The man chuckled, spat more of the black blood from his lips. He'd shed his shirt and stood bare-chested in the waning light.
Too late. Can't be stopped.
He came on, and Gerard made his decision. He squeezed the trigger again and again until each round was spent. The man jerked with each impact to his torso, wild eyes never leaving Gerard's. And when the gun clicked empty, he still stood. And he smiled. Sienna crouched by Mary and strained to see into the gloom. Part of her wished she hadn't. Something had gone very wrong in this old barn. The air hung heavy with moisture, and she made out bloated growths. Some mutant fungus dotted about and growing more thickly where the darkness deepened. They almost seemed to twitch and tremble as if alive and conscious of the intruders into their domain. Then came something more. Black and slick, they slid from the deeper shadows and wound their way between the weird mushrooms. She thought they were snakes, but they looked too wet and moved with a gelatinous wriggling altogether unnatural.
"She comes!"
screamed Mary. She rocked back and forth on the ground.
"She comes to us! We're hers and she ours and shall be one!"
One of the tendrils came feeling toward Mary's leg. Sienna grabbed the girl under her arms and dragged her back and away closer to the locked door. The things continued to probe the spot where she'd been blindly. Sienna fought to maintain some grip on reality. She had no explanation for this nightmare. She only knew that the moment she slipped, it would all be over. So she shut out the questions, the oddities, the sheer insanity, and threw herself against the door. Chains rattled outside, and the door held firm. Again, she threw herself forward, desperately hoping for something to give under her assault. When Mary screamed again, Sienna saw the slimy black things had found them once more. One oozed its way up Mary's leg, sliding up her thigh wetly. Before she knew what she was doing, Sienna sprang and slashed at it with the farmer's knife. The appendage split, and black putrescence spilled out as it retreated. A pained bellow rumbled from the deepest darkness, and again something large shifted. What Sienna saw then nearly made her lose that tenuous grasp on sane reality. Sliding from the darkness came something which her mind struggled to accept. It came on with the oozing motion of a slug, a horrible mass of flesh and bone, which defied any attempts to classify it. Foul manure and dark liquid poured in turn from orifices about its mass, and it squealed with porcine fury. The heads of swine poked here and there from its bloated, pulsating mass, their wild eyes roaming about the darkness. But more horrible were the very human-looking pieces of anatomy, which were also caught up with the flesh of this amalgamated abomination. And as its many eyes fixed on them, more of the slimy black tendrils erupted from its surface and made for the pair. She might have continued to stand there, staring in disbelief at the sight, had the sound of gunshots in the distance not brought her back to herself. She turned from the horror and kicked at one rotted board in the door with new, maddened ferocity. Just as she thought she would collapse, the board broke, and a glint of the fading sunlight spilled in. Grabbing Mary with one hand, she tried to press through the slot, but found it too narrow. Head out in the clean air, Sienna screamed for someone, anyone, as the oozing noises grew closer and closer. Samuel jerked to a stop halfway to the barn. That persistent animal squealing crawled around in his head and made it hard to think. Then more shots rang out from somewhere back in the tree line next to the house. He pivoted and began to run in the direction of the sound when something else cut through the babble from within the barn. He watched as a portion of the barn door splintered and a grime-ridden hand groped for purchase outside. The hand was soon followed by the shoulder and muck-streaked face of a woman who strained to fit through the tiny space and screamed. He still didn't understand what they had walked into, but that small voice insisted he get to the barn now. He sent up a small prayer that Gerard was handling himself and plunged toward the woman. Her eyes found him, and she waved him closer.
"It's all right, ma'am," he called. "Everything's all right now."
The woman's eyes bulged wildly.
"Get the fuck over here! We have to get out! It's in here with us!"
All questions left him. He raced to the struggling woman and took stock of the situation. The large barn door was secured with a heavy chain.
"Get back from the door!"
he shouted, and took aim at the heavy lock. The woman retreated from the hole. After a moment of hesitation, he fired and prayed there would be no wild ricochet and that no one would be hit on the other side. The lock broke enough to allow him to pull free the heavy chain. Frantic pounding came from the other side as he worked to release the door. Then it came open, and the woman spilled out onto the ground, brandishing a long knife. A wave of rancid air swept out behind her, and the baying of hogs reached an absolute fever pitch.
"Ma'am, everything is... Help me!"
The woman turned back to the darkness within the barn and grabbed at another form just within. A second woman lay sprawled within the doorway. Samuel took the sprawled woman by one arm while her compatriot took the other. Together, they slid her back toward the light. He sensed something just beyond sight within the darkness, and the small voice screamed at him to hurry. But before they could clear the door, ropey black things sprang forth and wrapped themselves around the fallen woman's ankles. She shrieked as the things wrenched her back toward the barn. The strength in that pull sent his fingers sliding, and the woman slipped in his grasp. Then strong hands seized him from behind, and he was heaved across the barnyard to crash against the nearby fencing. Dazedly, he saw an old man, lean, shirtless, and streaked with something black that might have been blood, grinning madly down at him.
The light!
Such was her only thought as Sienna crashed through the narrow opening of the barn door. Free from the darkness and smothering filth, she felt she could finally breathe. A dark-skinned man stood above her with a look of complete perplexity, but there was no time. She screamed at the man for help and wheeled around to retrieve Mary. They'd nearly pulled her free of the barn when those horrible things seized her legs again. Sienna fought for purchase, desperately fighting to free the girl when her help was suddenly torn free and thrown backwards. There was no time to comprehend what had happened, as, losing her assistance, the tendrils ripped Mary from her grasp and pulled her screaming into the fetid darkness. Then came a wet suckling noise, and the screaming was drowned out beneath the cacophony coming from the shadows. She stared at the spot where Mary had just been, feeling numb and empty. But she remembered the sudden removal of the man who had come to help, and whirled to find a bloodied but unbothered Floyd battering him. Knife in hand, she made for the old farmer's back when she fell face down in the dirt and began sliding back toward the darkness. One of the things had her by the leg. She twisted and slashed at it, but the thick appendage held firm, and soon she was nearly back within the barn doors. She braced a foot on one of the doors and hauled back, not breaking free, but stopping the momentum. More of the loathsome things snaked from between the white fungal growth, seeking her out. Using the braced foot as leverage, she sat up, took the long knife in both hands, and plunged it downward with a scream. The blade bit through the thing and planted itself in the earth. Immediately, the tendril released its grip and frantically squirmed, unable to move, spiked as it was, to the ground.
"You little bitch!"
Floyd stormed across the barnyard. The man he'd been beating sat slumped against the fence, spitting blood from his mouth.
"You'll ruin everything!"
Before she could recover, he was on her, swinging. She dodged back, losing balance, but finding the broken board from the door as she scrambled back to her feet. She spun to him, bringing the board up high and swiping it across Floyd's cheek. The jagged end of the board split flesh, and more black ooze issued from the wound. The loose skin hung like a flap, and his yellowed teeth flashed, fully exposed in his ruined face, as he still came on with ferocity.
"You are chosen. You have no choice. You will sustain her avatar. You will sustain us both."
Hopelessness threatened to drown her. Nothing would stop this guy. No matter how much punishment he took, he just would not stop. This whole fetid place was a maelstrom of malignance, drawing all into it. And it wouldn't rest until it drew her in and chewed her up. As Floyd came at her again, she swung the old board hard enough to break it on him. But still he stood. He seized her by the throat, lifting her from the ground so that she had to scrabble at his arm to not strangle in his grasp. That smile came back to his face, not in the least bit warm or hospitable, but malevolent and insane, beyond all humanity. He began carrying her back toward the barn door. A report rang out, and Sienna felt something whiz by her at top speed. Floyd's arm burst in a bloody gout at the shoulder, and he lost his grip on her throat. As she collapsed, gasping, she saw the battered man had crawled and retrieved his gun. One eye swollen nearly shut, he used the other to aim and plugged several more shots into Floyd's abdomen. The farmer jerked with the force of each shot, but remained upright, laughing madly as more of the black oozed from his body. But something happened then. In the last moments of its setting, the reddened sun was enveloped behind the tree line. Yet the final shafts of light poked through the branches at an angle, spearing toward the carnage. And as one beam pierced the gloom around the barn door, it lighted upon the oozing black tendril pinned there. As soon as the light touched the slick flesh, a flash like white fire sizzled along its surface. A deep, pained moaning of many voices, animal and human, went up from within the dark, and the tendril fought to free itself from the blade, to no avail. Upon seeing this, Sienna scrambled not away, but toward the large door. She grabbed one side and pulled it wider as more of the light spilled in. Sounds like the popping hiss of bacon frying came from within the barn, and the moaning became a raucous shrieking of panic, which split her skull. She fell to her knees, hands over her ears, but watched as the white fire trailed further up the appendage and into the blackness. Samuel was dumbstruck. He couldn't be seeing what he was seeing. That old-timer had really packed a punch, and his head felt like it had been slammed by a truck. This must be some hallucination from the hit he'd taken, because the old man still stood there, having taken round after round with no effect, laughing like mad. But then the laughter stopped abruptly. It wasn't clear to Samuel what had happened, but the woman struggled to her feet and swung open the barn door. And as the light of the setting sun pushed in, something in the barn seemed to catch fire as a horrible, many-throated scream issued forth from the shadows. The old man put out his hands and stumbled toward the opening, shoving the girl away and struggling to shut the door. He never got the chance. For, as the strange flames leapt and smoke began to curl from the roof of the barn, the man fell to his knees. His body trembled, and a coughing fit racked his frame. Black bile issued from his mouth in a spray, and the wounds in his body began to flow freely with more of the black ichor. He choked and gasped as he spasmed, as if his lungs were suddenly aware of all the holes in them. In a fatal push, he reached a hand toward the darkness, which began to slough off its flesh even as it stretched forth. Then he thumped wetly to the ground. Samuel sat there and could only stare dumbly and uncomprehending at the melting corpse as acrid smoke from the barn began to send him into a coughing fit. His eyes burned as he struggled to his feet, a thousand half-formed questions swirling within him. Then came that small voice again, and yes, he was sure he heard it as well as his own. The girl. Sienna did not wait to watch the strange sorcery which unfolded within the barn. Seeing the farmer begin to cough and vomit, she understood that he was through. And so was she. Aches pulsed through her from Floyd's rough handling, but as she rose and made her way across the field, her limbs seemed to limber until she achieved a hobbling jog. Derelict equipment, old bits of machinery and broken-down cars overgrown with grass dotted the area. But she noticed one thing which did not fit with the rest. Partly obscured by a tarp thrown over its top, she recognized the battered rear bumper of the green Civic. Removing the tarp, Sienna scrambled inside. She nearly jumped at her reflection in the center mirror, besmirched as her face was with the foul stuff Floyd had put on her. She scraped it away furiously. To her amazement, her purse lay forgotten in the passenger seat, still closed. No sign of where the damned phone got to, but the money was still there and untouched. Apparently, Floyd hadn't given her things a second thought. probably hadn't felt a need to poke through the belongings of just another cast-off victim. And for that, she was grateful. But, like the phone, her keys were nowhere to be found. Realizing they could be anywhere, she turned and began toward the house when the farmer's truck caught her eye. She looked in through the window and found the keys still in the ignition.
Hey, wait!
She froze and turned to see the battered man who'd come to her aid. He took her in with his unswollen eye, gun held at his side.
I'm Detective Samuel Cole, he said. Everything's all right now,
I think.
Shit, I don't know what to think. You just sit tight and we'll get you some help.
She swung open the truck's door and got in. The vehicle growled to life as she turned the key.
I don't want any help. Hey!
The man was quick despite his condition. Before she could put it in drive, he had the door open and turned the key back to the off position.
What do you think you're doing?
She sat for a moment, staring blankly ahead. After this nightmare, it wasn't some crazy farmer or slobbering monster that would end her bid for freedom. It was the good old long arm of the law. And she didn't trust that arm to protect her from Gregor any more than it could have protected her from Floyd.
If you really want to help me, you'll let me go. Forget you saw me. Please.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're that girl. We got a bulletin to be on the lookout for you. Tears burned in her eyes, but she wouldn't let them fall. She pulled the man's hand from the key and cranked it anew.
You can shoot me if you want. I'm gonna leave, and I'm taking this truck.
She looked him in the eye then, trying to project absolute resolution. The detective studied her with his clear eye. He stepped back and cocked his head. The motion struck her as funny, like a dog listening to something only it could hear. She wondered if a few good punches from Floyd had scrambled his brains. Then he nodded to himself slightly and stepped back.
I don't know what's going on with you or what the hell,
he gestured around them,
is going on with any of this. I don't know why I'm doing this. But if you're gonna go, better go now.
The tears began falling.
Thank you,
she said in a small voice. Without waiting for him to change his mind, she shut the door and began to descend the gravel drive. She watched him in the rearview mirror as she went, now only a silhouette flanked by the guttering smoke from the barn. She didn't know what lay ahead of her, or if she had truly given Gregor the slip. But these questions fell away as she looked at that figure. Instead, she found herself thinking about guardian angels, of all things. Before, she might have scoffed at the idea. But after seeing what she'd seen, Sienna wondered if maybe there truly were more things in heaven and earth than one might ever account for. But for now, she was free, and in short order, she regained the highway, for the back roads no longer seemed as twisting as before. Shortly after, she finally stopped for some food. To her utter amazement, there was a working payphone at a bus station nearby, and just enough change in the center console of the truck. So, she made a call, and when Rita answered, she could only weep with joy as she looked toward the hope of freedom. Samuel sat on the front steps of the old farmhouse with an ice pack on his temple. The farm pulsed with the lights of emergency vehicles. Strangely, once the fire got going, he found the radio working without issue and was able to call in the situation. Though without an easy source of water, the firefighting efforts had been mainly aimed at containing the blaze while the barn burned itself out. His head ached fiercely, But the real headaches were still to come. Randolph and others had already shown up, huffing and puffing and asking questions for which he could scarcely provide answers. And even if he had answers to give, he knew they would not be liked, much less believed. After all, he hadn't decided what to believe himself. In the end, he didn't try to explain anything past the most basic details. It wouldn't matter anyway. They would draw whatever conclusions they would want in order to give the affair as tidy a conclusion as could be managed. For now, he just enjoyed the simple pleasure of still being alive as the first responders flittered this way and that. Yet, through the chaos, Samuel only had eyes for one person, Gerard, who was being ushered into an ambulance on a stretcher. The sight made Samuel sick. He'd found his partner beaten nearly to death in a root cellar of some kind, just off to the side of the property. The place had been marked with weird symbols. Some kind of occult stuff, if he had had to guess, and Gerard had been laying there, bloodied, in the center of it. Samuel couldn't help but think that it ought to have been him down there taking that beating instead of his partner. He'd been the one who insisted they come out here, who'd insisted they come to this very farm. Maybe if he had just been there to back his partner up, it would have been different. The girl would have been dead, and both of you with her. Samuel shifted on the steps. It was that voice again. Perhaps if there was blame to place, it ought to rest there. But that was ridiculous. There could be no voice, only himself. Maybe he was going crazy. And yet, despite it all, somehow he sensed the voice. Shit. He had to stop treating it as though it was something other than his own thoughts. Was right. Seeing that no one was close or paying attention, he stood and walked away from the chaos to the nearby tree line. Into the quiet of the forest, he whispered, "Who are you? What are you?" He waited in the darkness, the distant lights spiking red and blue through the tree trunks. At last, he let out a rueful laugh. What was he thinking? Maybe he needed a psych eval. He made to turn back when something stopped him in his tracks. It came just at his shoulder like a chill whisper of breath, though he suspected no one else would hear it had they been there to listen. His pulse began rising. Goose flesh rippled on his arms. It was indeed the voice, still and small, but clear as a bell. "I am one who calls."
Ha ha! A mysterious voice speaks as if whispered on a breeze. A tentacled terror that hates the light draws in victims using an acolyte farmer, signal jamming, and spatial manipulation. And all of this just outside Brighton. Could it be a coincidence? Or might we see more of our intrepid detectives in future stories set around Brighton? We'll have to see. But let me know what you thought of this story in the comments. If you enjoyed this story, please find a playlist of more of this author's work appearing on your screen shortly. You may find there are more connections between the tales than you expect. Please also leave a like on this video and subscribe to hear more stories like this one. Whatever you do, oh, need I say it? Don't drink the lemonade, and don't go into the barn, and don't fall asleep.